Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Vanessa Bayer, and this is my brother, Jonah.
We're two siblings who love to talk about our childhood and nostalgia and how it shaped us into the people we are today.
Who are really sizzling, if I do say so myself.
Welcome to How Did We Get Weird.
So Jonah, our guest today knows a thing or two about the grill, and it's summer, and I was wondering, how's your grilling game this summer?
My grilling game is weak this summer. I have a charcoal grill. I feel like it takes forever to get it hot, and then it never ends up really, I don't cook it well. I also, a couple years ago, got one of these Uni pizza grills that runs on propane, and all the photos of people making pizzas look incredible. And every time I make one, it's like collapsed on itself and catches on fire. I feel like I'm good at buying the grilling equipment, but not good at making food that tastes good.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and our dad used to grill a lot growing up, and I just didn't get that gene or something.
That's right. Yeah, I have a grill at my house, and the only time I've ever used it was when our parents were in town and dad grilled the stuff on it.
Sounds like we're not great at it, but let's get into it. Let's introduce our guest and maybe he can give us some tips.
That's right.
Our guest today is an Emmy-winning freelance filmmaker, author, and photographer, who's referred to as a foremost authority on hamburgers by the New York Times. He's the author of The Great American Burger Book and host of the Burger Scholar Sessions, in addition to being founder of the Food and Film Festival. Let's welcome George Motes. Hey, George, how's it going?
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you. I love the Uni story because I can safely say I'm a grill master. I know what I'm doing with all grills.
Yes,
I feel so comfortable with every type of flame grill, whatever it is. But the Uni threw me for a loop. It tried to kill me.
Wow.
Really?
And I am not happy with my Uni at all. I was gifted an Uni. I love it so much. I love the idea of it. But I tell you right now, I think it tried to kill me. And I have had the same problems you've had. So I've enlisted the help of a good friend of mine, Miriam Weiskind, who's a pizza genius. At some point, we're going to get together and she's going to show me how to use this damn thing. But otherwise, I can't stand it right now.
Did you make your own dough or did you use pre-bought dough?
No, I'm no fool. I wasn't going to go that deep. I bought some dough from a local pizza place.
Okay, yeah.
And I had the same thing you do, folding on top of each other.
Yeah.
At one point, the pizza just ignited and cooked to crisp. I didn't
realize
dough.
If you go online, people get really into it. I made my own dough. It's either like too much hydration, so it like sticks to everything, or it's too dry. And it's so much time goes into and prep. And then it's like to have like the most,
And it takes like 20 seconds to make a pizza in this thing.
Yeah.
It cooks too fast, too hot. Somehow the learning curve seems very steep, and I wasn't really into that.
I'm with you.
And George, when you say it tried to kill you, do you mean just out of frustration or did it almost kill you because of the flames? Yeah.
Both, actually. I would say mostly out of just pure frustration. I was so miserable. I also made the biggest mistake you could possibly make. I decided to introduce the uni to my family during a family party.
And
everyone's standing around, you know, when are we getting pizza? I thought this thing cooks in 20 seconds. And I'm like throwing pizzas across the backyard. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it did try to kill me.
I've had this thought of doing that. And then I tried to do a test run. I'm like, I can't have people over. This is going to be a disaster.
It was. It would have been.
Yeah. Yes. George, what, like, when you were a kid, you know, obviously we talk about Childhood Lessons podcast, were you into grilling and all that stuff as a kid? Was that a part of your childhood?
No, not at all. My dad grilled in the backyard, and he made, you know, sorry, Dad, love you. He made bad hamburgers. Not bad hamburgers. He just didn't, there weren't, after I became, you know, known as a hamburger guy, hamburger expert, I could safely say, I feel like he put barbecue sauce in his meat, which is fine if he wants to do that kind of thing, but I learned later on, it's just not a great idea. So I did not grow up grilling at all. I learned it later on. So.
And how did you learn it? Because I have your cookbook, which is a good tool. I have the gear. How do you learn how to do this? Because I feel like you hit a certain age and you just feel like you should be able to do it. And I can't.
Yes.
You have to let yourself understand it. It's a certain amount of learning that goes into grilling where you have to screw up a lot. People think, I can just go in the backyard and weekend warrior and grill some stuff. It's not that easy at all. In fact, grilling in the backyard is probably the hardest way to make a burger or even cook any type of food at all. If you can harness flames and cook over a flame on a grill, you've done something that most people really can't do at all.
Yeah.
That's the truth. It's much easier to make food inside, you know, in a controlled environment. Grills are tough because they can be hot over here and cold over there, and you can set it up to be that way. But sometimes you can have a major flame that's out of control, or you can have a propane grill that doesn't really cook at the right temperature all the time. It's always too low and you can't control it. Maybe you bought a cheap one, you know.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to cook outside.
Yeah. I think the problem is that it looks so easy when people are good at it.
Right.
You're like, I could do that.
Yeah. People are like, throw it on the grill, you know, and then you're like, this feels so hard.
Yeah.
So would you say, as a grill master / burger expert, is cooking burgers on the grill your favorite way to do it or not really? Because this could go any which way. Wow.
Exactly. I truly believe that it's one of the hardest ways to make a burger. It's not my favorite way. It is definitely a great means to an end. If you're trying to make a burger that tastes like it's cooked over a flame, it is a very specific flavor. But honestly, I think it's much harder. It's much easier just to do it on a flat top, mm-hmm. you know, in a skillet or like a cast iron pan inside. Or I tell people, if you're going to be outside and you have a big grill, take a small cast iron skillet, like a pan, and put it onto the grill grate. And then you can slide the pan around the hot spot and the cold spot and cook that way if you want to cook in a pan.
Wow.
Got it. George, where did you grow up?
I grew up on Long Island.
On Long Island. Okay.
I grew up in Garden City, Long Island. Yeah.
Garden City. Okay. And were you like, when you were a kid, were you eating McDonald's? Were you eating those kind of burgers? Or what was kind of your favorite foods as a kid?
My parents divorced or separated pretty early. And my dad's big day was Wednesday to come see us. And he would take us to either McDonald's, Wendy's, or Burger King, or Howard Johnson's. Those are the four.
Got it.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time eating a lot of Wendy's and Burger King and McDonald's. So.
Got it.
And did those burgers inspire you? Like, did you love those?
I mean, no. I thought they were terrible. I mean, I thought they were... I remember thinking, like, it's got to be more than this, right? This is not very good at all. I remember arriving at, opening up the burger patty at Howard Johnson's once and seeing the grill marks on there. And my dad laughing, saying, those are not real grill marks.
Okay,
those are painted on. The two of us would laugh about the painted on grill marks at the Howard Johnson burger.
So maybe it kind of fueled you.
Sure.
You were like, I can do this better. Yeah.
Well, what really fueled me was I arrived at the Apple Pan in Los Angeles when I was in my early 20s for the first time. Actually, the first time I was in LA, the first thing I had was a burger at the Apple Pan.
Wow.
And I sat down. Yeah, it's true. That's actually sort of where it began. And it made me think back to all the burgers I had in my life and thought to myself, this is nothing compared to this. All that stuff is crap compared to this. This is because I was actually living in a moment. It wasn't just about the burger itself, but it was about the surrounding. I was surrounded by the tartan red wallpaper on the wall, obviously, and the guys wearing the white paper caps, and it was just it felt like I was in some like I was on a set. I was in LA for the first time. I was on a Hollywood set, and this is an old school burger joint.
Yeah,
but it really is just a hamburger joint that still is lost in time.
Yeah,
and I realized that the burger tasted that much better because of where I was eating. It was experiential, and that changed my life. That's the moment when I became obsessed with hamburgers.
Vanessa, have you been to the Apple Pan? You live in LA.
I've never been to the Apple Pan.
Oh, really? You go. You got to go.
I've been there and I live in Massachusetts. You got to go.
I got to go.
You got to go.
What would you say is the best burger in LA? Would you say it's there?
No, I don't play favorites because I just get myself in trouble.
Sure.
I stopped playing favorites many, many years ago.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's a good point.
It's a great hamburger experience.
Yeah.
Put it this way. It's a great hamburger experience on the west side of LA. And I say on the west side because people don't go because, it's on the west side. I can't go all the way over there.
Yeah, right? I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I will go.
What are your thoughts on, like, you know, there's a lot of fancy burgers out there these days, you know, different types of media. And what do you think about these kind of, like, and they're expensive, right? Like, what are your thoughts on kind of the fancy burger craze?
I'm fine with just about any burger experience out there.
Yeah.
I'm not so happy about the burgers that are unattainable.
Yeah.
You know, these burgers that cost $100, it's not a great idea.
Yeah.
But generally, I think anytime you cause a little bit of press or anything about a burger, whether it's, you know, high-end, low-end, whatever it is, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's fair.
But again, it's like, you know, those burgers are not daily beaters. They're not the ones you're going to go and have every day. They're the ones you may have once a year to celebrate. So they serve a purpose, but to me, they're not, you know, than all that important to me.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm with you. And Long Island, obviously big for their bagels. Were you into eating a lot of bagels as a kid, or what were some of your other kind of comfort foods?
No, I mean, my ultimate comfort food as a child was the great Long Island breakfast special, which is basically just ham egg cheese on a roll, or if you're a bacon person, bacon egg cheese on a roll.
Okay.
Salt, pepper, ketchup. That was the call. On a poppy seed, like German Kaiser roll, you know?
Yep. Oh, man.
That was it.
That sounds pretty good.
And a
Yoo-hoo.
Oh, yeah. George is drinking a Yoo-hoo
still
right
drinking
now.
A Yoo-hoo.
Vanessa, we never really drank a lot of Yoo-hoo as kids.
No, we didn't really have, we were like a skim milk family. Like drinks wise, we didn't have much other than water. I guess we had soda in our house.
Well, we had stuff other than water. I mean, we weren't just drinking, you know.
I was.
We were drinking a lot of Snapple, you know, back in our childhood. Snapple was kind of the rain.
Jonah,
king.
You were. I was drinking water.
Okay, I was drinking a lot of Snapple, apparently.
Yeah, you love Snapple.
And George, obviously you're very involved in music and stuff too. Like, what was kind of your entry point into that kind of stuff?
Well, I spent a lot of time in high school listening to punk. I was a big, at the time, metal was charting. And I was not interested in metal. I was more interested in real hardcore punk, New York hardcore. I was a huge fan of the Ramones. Outside of New York, was a big fan of Black Flag, big Circle Jerks. I mean, pardon the name, but I didn't name it.
No.
To me, it was life. It was sustenance. I had to have it. So I would go to the. I spent a lot of time at CBGB's when I was a kid.
Yes.
And they had this Thursday afternoon matinee. And school will be done at 3:00. We jump on the train right there in Garden City and shoot into the city. And I could be there by 4:00 to get to the 4 to 8 p.m. Thursday matinees. They would shut the bar down, just put pitchers of water on the bar. And Joey Ramone would be like wandering to the crowd. So wow. Weird. And then like six bands would play in 4 hours. And every song started with 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yep. Oh my God.
It made me. I mean, it changed my life. I was so obsessed with music at that point anyway. That to be in the, like, not in, I was actually pushing the mosh pit a few times. But that's back then, the mosh pit was not dangerous. It was more of like a gentleman's game where you're sort of, you know, pushing each other and shoving. But you weren't, there was no punching or, there was, actually, this is before even stage diving back then when I was in high school.
Okay.
It was just like a gentleman's mosh, you know? But you still, if it got crazy, you'd get pushed into the corners. I once actually got pushed into the bass cabinet that was about 8 feet tall and I couldn't get out. And I could feel my whole body vibrating. So I was literally in the bass. I was in the bass drummer's, you know, guitar at that point.
Oh my gosh.
But it was formative.
Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break and then we're going to get more into CBGB matinees with George Moats.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
And we're back. George, I'm so interested in hearing about this. I have so many questions. Did you ever see Bad Brains there? Is my first question.
I probably did. I think I did. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like one of the ones we saw all the time was a band called Doggy Style.
Okay.
It was an LA band. They were fantastic.
Okay.
Token Entry was another New York band. It was fantastic.
Token Entry.
They were great. Oof.
Yes.
Man.
Yes.
I'm sure I saw the Bad Brains.
Yeah, obviously Gorilla Biscuits. Yeah, so many legendary New York hardcore bands playing there. I went to CB's a couple times before it closed, and I actually lived briefly before he passed with Arturo Vega on his loft.
Oh, wow.
On Bowery, and he's fourth, and so really close by, yeah.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time there right to the end. I had friends who were, I was in a band also all through the 90s.
Right, right.
A band called Toss, we were Toss. We had an umlaut over the O, so we're actually pronounced Tuss. Tuss.
Did you ever play Austria. CBs with your band?
Yeah, Tuss. No, we tried so hard. I mean, she wouldn't let us in. I don't know why. We tried so hard.
Yeah.
I would give her that. It was Hilly Crystal's, I guess, wife or ex-wife or something. We'd hand her the tape and say, please let us in. Back when we were handing out cassette tapes. Please come on, let us play. She's like, no, I don't know. I don't think so. And we had a crowd. We were the regular band at a place called Luna Lounge. I remember Luna Lounge?
Yes,
Rob Sasher.
Yes.
Rob Sasher produced our second album.
Wow.
And he was, so we were actually, we were there with like, we were every Thursday. And we also played with Lotion, The National, but way back in the day, but at a tiny little stage. So I was trying to break out, and I saw CB's as a future, you know, goal. She would never let us in for some reason. Wow.
Did you see the Alan Rickman like movie, the dramatization about it?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
No,
I should. CBGB one.
I watched it recently. It was entertaining. It was, you know,
good.
And I just read Debbie Harry's book, where obviously that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little younger than Debbie Harry.
Yes, yes.
So her memory of CBGB's is like a 20 years earlier, I think.
Yeah, yeah. She was there at like the very beginning, like the Max is Kansas City, then crossing over. Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know. Absolutely. I know. Vanessa, did you ever go to CBGB? Probably not. That might have been before your time.
I did once because, okay, this is how I think I went. Because did it used to have any kind of, am I losing my mind? Did it used to have any kind of like a disco? No.
I don't think so. I think you're thinking of somewhere else.
Anti-disco.
Yeah.
They were very anti-disco. Okay, because is there another huge venue like that?
It's not really a huge venue. It was pretty small.
I'm thinking of a totally different thing that they did like a special reopening of it in like the 2010s when I was living in New York and I went to it. So it was definitely not CBGB though. So.
No, CBGB was turned into a clothing store.
Yes.
Varvatos.
And I went there once with a friend of the show, Stephen Smith, and he was shopping for some clothes. And he was like, watch this. He was like, do you guys have any beer? And they were like, yeah, sure. And like someone went in the back and just got us two Stellas. I was like, you can do that? He was like, yeah, these kind of stores, like where you're paying like $300 for a t-shirt, you can basically ask for anything and they'll bring it to you. And yeah, they brought us up beer.
Actually, what they did was they kept the bar in place, and the bar became the so if you buy something at Varvatos, the actual bar is now the checkout counter.
Gotcha.
So the only thing that remains. I actually went in there Because a friend of mine was playing there the week before they closed, and his band was playing, and I was there for, you know, for sound check and everything. And I went in and I took a real pro camera and I shot the entire place.
Wow.
I mean, I shot the urinals, I shot the ceilings, the floors, I shot the outlets on the stage.
Yeah,
I shot the bass cabinet that I got stuck in.
Yeah, yeah.
Still there.
Oh my God.
I shot everything. And I think it was such a great send off, I think, because I knew they're going to just tear it apart. It was gone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, were you ever, you know, and obviously, you know, the bathrooms are kind of legendarily disgusting. And, you know, obviously that, you know, that scene could be violent at times. Were there any times that were kind of scary for you there? Or do you feel like everyone kind of looked out for each other?
Oh, everyone looked out for each other. There's no question about it. It was not a very scary place at all. I mean, the bathrooms were actually not that bad. They just had no doors.
Bad. Right.
you're taking a leak and you look to your left and there's a girl going into the women's room, which actually had a door on it.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, there was just an open bathroom with just covered in stickers, the whole thing, floor, ceiling, everything.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a dangerous place. It was actually a very happy place. But I spent a lot of time there after school as a teenager thinking that I this is where I belong. I feel good here. You know,
yeah.
It wasn't full of freaks. It wasn't full of like dangerous freaks. It was full of a bunch of us, you know, a bunch of weirdos.
Yes. Yes.
Jonah, it was sort of like your Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, I hung out a lot in the Dunkin' Donuts parking lot growing up. There weren't bands playing, but it was like this 8 punks from our area who are like talking about the Dead Kennedys or whatever every night.
Yeah, you had it much better.
Yeah, CPG was a little cooler scene probably.
We used to hang out in front. We used to go to Indian food on 6th Street.
Okay.
For like a dollar. You could fill up for like a dollar. And then spend the rest of your money, you know, on buying sodas at the bar.
Yeah, yeah.
So to hang out in front and watch all the punks come in and out, you know, it was all back then. I mean, this is the day of the mohawk. People had like the full on, like foot over their head mohawks.
Yeah.
It was intense.
Yeah. 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 I was just listening to an interview with my friend Norman, and he was in a bunch of New York. He was in Shelter and a bunch of bands, and he was talking a lot about the bodega like across the street from CB's or something. Everyone go over there and get water or something.
But yeah. We used to hang out on the bill court doors. We'd sit on the bill court doors right outside the deli there, just waiting for like to get in. Or just hanging out.
At a certain time of night, would they like make you leave because you were...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
8 o'clock.
They'd just get you out of there.
They would just corral everyone towards the door and push us all out. All these teenagers, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. George, I'm curious, like, when it comes to sort of food and music, like, you know, some venues have food, you know, like Warsaw and Greenpoint, I remember they had pierogies you could get. Like, certain venues have, like, their sort of thing. What do you think is, like, a good kind of venue food, I guess. Obviously, CB's, I don't think, had that. But some more and more venues do, right? You go to the movies now, you can order all this stuff. Like, what do you think is a good food?
It's true. I mean, at Brooklyn Bowl, which has obviously a great stage and decent bands playing, they have, that's Blue Ribbon. A Blue Ribbon, you know, kitchen is in there.
Right.
And that's really good. It's almost too much.
Yeah.
Kind of odd. Their big thing is fried chicken. I'm not going to eat fried chicken and stick my fingers in the bowling ball
and
watch a band. So it's a little bizarre. But that was good you brought that up, because I think that the pierogies at Warsaw was a great idea.
Me too.
Because it actually worked with the neighborhood.
Yep.
The neighborhood was all Polish. And they were authentic. I mean, I remember the first time I discovered it. I went there for a show. I saw a guy walk around with like a paper plate with a bunch of food on. I was like, what is that? Where did that come from? Did you bring it from home? What is that?
I know.
And I said, no, there's a little old lady selling stuff over there. And there's a separate room. You'd walk into a separate room.
Yeah.
It was like these, just like chafing trays and a bunch of pierogies and Polish food. Like, oh my God, this is incredible.
What
a great idea.
It's the best.
So thank you for bringing that up. That's a good point.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was great. I was always excited when there was a show there, because I was like, oh, I don't have to eat dinner.
Right.
I can roll up there for like seven bucks. I can get a plate. Yeah, it was the best.
They had a mirror ball, by the way. You know, remember Warsaw, I think they're still open, right? They have a huge mirror ball.
I don't know. Probably. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's tough. Because I do feel like sometimes venues try to do like, I don't know, they try to do these kind of offbeat foods or hot dogs or something. It can be tough. You know, because you're there, you're hungry. Yeah.
Well, Jonah, when I used to see your bands play at like St. Vitus, I remember I always thought it was so odd that they had so much vegan food.
They had buns.
Just because it...
They had like buns. They had like a bun station, yeah.
Yeah. It just, and I guess, you know, I shouldn't generalize, but like, it is interesting when the music or like the venue sort of doesn't exactly match up with the food, in the sense that I felt like it was all these kind of like... tough, like scary people, you know, punk people. Not that punks are scary. Jonah, you're a little punk. But then to be like, would you like the like most gentle food?
Yeah.
Always was kind of shocking to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, as George knows, you know, a lot of these bands like Youth of Today, all these bands were very into vegetarianism. And so that's a big part of the culture. But I understand what you're saying.
Yola Tango loves food. They sing about food. When they travel, they make sure that they have, you know, they're going to great restaurants. I have friends who have restaurants who send them food when they're in New York.
Whoa, that's awesome.
Yeah. So nice. Isn't that nice? Wonderful. No one sends you food.
I got a whole rider, George. Don't worry about me.
Do you remember there was like a food cookbook? I got it when I worked at Fuse. That was like bands contributed recipes. And
oh, wow.
Yeah. And I remember this one that I used to make was El Jefe, the guitar player, NoFX had one where he was like, you take two different flavors of ramen, you put both noodles, both sauce packets, and add a can of corn. And
for a show?
Yeah. I don't know. And I remember being like, looking at the recipe of my roommate being like, why are you using a cookbook to make this?
Because it's been done before. It's tried and true.
Exactly. Right?
Jonah, I don't know if your class did this, but I remember when we were in like kindergarten or something, our teacher made a cookbook. I think it might have actually been preschool, but I still remember it. But our teacher made a cookbook where we each had to like describe something that like our mom or our parents make that is like our favorite recipe of theirs.
Uh-huh.
And I think I eventually lost it, but I used to read it like as I was growing up. It would make me laugh so hard because it was like people in my grade being like, you take two buckets of like, it would be like my mom's like delicious like pudding. First, you take two buckets of Jell-O and you like put it like, because it's like the teacher's just dictating what the kid is saying. You put it in another bucket and then you bake it in the oven for 100 hours. And then like it was just like, that's kind of is reminding me of this like NoFX recipe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's similar. It's similar.
A friend of mine has a podcast that called Food on Tour.
Okay.
And have you heard of this one? They talk about...
I haven't.
It's bands talking about their favorite place to get food on the road. Because bands always have trouble finding good food on the road. They're just stuck at McDonald's again. So there's something to be said for that. I mean, I like the cookbook idea, though.
Yeah, the cookbook is cool. I don't know. I have it somewhere. But yeah, I should probably explore more of the recipes. I think they're a little more culinary than ramen-based ones. Yeah.
I bet they're probably similar to like a church recipe book. You know, those great, this one you find at yard sales are put together by a bunch of moms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're always like there were like seven recipes for something called dump cake in every single one of them, you know?
Yeah. Dump cake.
It's a real thing. Dump cake.
Yes. I've heard of it. I'm not exact. What is in it?
I think you just dump everything in the pan and cook it.
Okay. Okay.
Or when you cook it, then you dump it upside down and then has pineapples on top or something. I don't know. Dump cake is a very specific thing.
Yeah.
That I don't really know.
Yeah,
I don't
that's
really
not your, got it.
Not my thing, no.
You know, sometimes like I feel like, you know, having worked in music a lot, I'm always kind of listening to things kind of critically. It can be hard to maybe like enjoy things sometimes. Like when you're eating, can you just kind of enjoy a meal? Or are you like comparing it to other things or analyzing it? Like, oh, you know, what's that like for you,
I guess? That's a great question, yeah.
These days, yes, I do tend to critically analyze a lot of food I eat, which actually I think is good because it forces me basically to eat great food all the time. So I know where to find that. I knew who to ask about good food. I know the questions to ask about good food. When I get the good food in front of me, I try to dissect it, try to reverse engineer how they put it together. So unfortunately, these days I do spend a lot of time thinking about how food is made, what goes into it, and being critical about it for sure, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to a hamburger.
Yes.
I bet. Well, I'm sure. And it's like, what's your etiquette? What's your move when someone's like, George, this is like the best burger. You got to try this burger. Like, you know, they're really talking it up and then you get it and it tastes just like every other hamburger you had. Or you're like, yeah, it's pretty good. Or like, what's your move there?
I don't do that anymore. So probably the last 5 or 6 years, maybe more than that, 10 years, I have this legion of what I call expert burger tasters in America, EBTs. I call them EBTs for short.
Okay.
And their job is to, if someone gives me that kind of advice, then I'll send them out to go try it first.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
That is incredible.
Sorry, it's kind of like a hamburger advanced team. You know, oh, you got to try this burger. It's got this and that and that and that.
Yeah. How does someone get to be on the
EBT,
on the league of EBTs? Because Jonah and I aren't not interested, not to speak for you, Jonah.
So the way it works is that I have fans that reach out to me either email or DM on Instagram or something. And they say, oh, I found this great burger. And I can kind of sniff them out and decide if they understand like my mission, what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to preserve the American hamburger based on the classics and the primary source burgers, not the stunt burgers. And my job is to talk to them about how to discern between a stunt burger that's nothing but a stunt. Literally, it doesn't taste like anything. Like the mac and cheeseburger is the perfect example.
Okay.
Those two things should not go together ever on a burger, but somehow everyone loves talking about and taking pictures of the mac and cheeseburger. Literally, it's mac and cheese on top of a hamburger patty.
Okay.
Two things that should not be in your mouth at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, they should be on the separate sides of
the
plate.
Yeah, I hear you.
So,
yeah.
So EBTs, they come to me and I literally have someone or more than one person at all corners of the country. It's now parts of the world too.
Wow. Yeah. Probably the guy who can't grill and the woman who thought CBGB's was a disco club might not make the EBT cut.
Is there another place in New York that has like initials that was a disco place? Am I losing my mind?
I'm thinking.
I don't know. I don't know if there's like a real big disco. And there was Studio 54. That probably
yeah,
not.
That's what I was thinking of.
That was okay. It. There you go.
Okay.
They reopened Studio 54 and I went to it.
Got it.
Yes.
And it's very different from CBGB's. And by the way, I like researched CBGB's a little and it said that it was a biker bar and before that a dive bar. And then it became, you know, what we know of a punk rock bar. But somehow I was like, Wikipedia doesn't know about when they were disco.
Yeah.
But it's because I was thinking
that's
of Studio
probably
54.
It. George, I was recently in Maine and they had, you know, lobsters, obviously like a big thing there. They had burgers with lobster on them, like an actual burger and then like lobster on top. What are your thoughts on this kind of seafood combo burger, surf and turf, not into it?
Not your fave.
Surf and turf is tough. I mean,
I'm with you.
Can be done, but I don't know. It's just, it seems a bit much. I mean, I just did something for some friends of mine where I put oysters on top of a burger.
Okay.
But because they were fried oysters, it actually kind of worked. It's almost like a...
Yeah.
Yeah, it somehow worked, but lobster, I'm not sure. It's kind of a weird combination. Just two very different things in your mouth at the same time. I don't know. I just have a problem sometimes with myself even trying to, you know, stray from the classics, trying to stray from like a simple burger with only two or three ingredients on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very difficult.
You know, it seems like there's so many people from like the music industry have gotten involved in the restaurant and food worlds. Like, what do you sort of see, especially, I guess, in punk and hardcore and obviously like Superiority Burger and all this stuff happening in New York? Like, what do you sort of see as a connection there from your perspective?
Between music and food?
Yeah.
I think people are very passionate about both.
Yeah.
And you've watched like the lead singer of LCD Sound System is a big sushi guy, from what I understand. He loves sushi. He also opened a restaurant in Brooklyn called the Something Horseman, I think. I forgot what it's called though. But
okay.
Like I was saying, Yola Tango is obsessed with spicy hot chicken and other foods. They love to eat out and eat well. So people, I think, you know, just like I was saying, this other podcast called Food on Tour, that there is a connection between being on the road and having to eat the same damn food all the time. And for some of us, you need to get out there and go beyond the crap and find something that's authentic and real.
Yeah.
Because you do spend a lot of time, you know, if you're on the road, you spend so much time, you know, just settling for something. You know, your life is thrown completely out of balance because you're sleeping in parking lots on a bus.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, you're just out of whack. You're not home. You're not in a real bed. You know, you're sleeping with a bunch of other people you don't know, or you don't know, you know, almost too well. But you have to put yourself in a place where am I going to find great food?
Yeah.
So I think there's a connection there. I think you're forced into it.
Yeah. I think there's a big misconception about like being on the road or being in a band or being backstage where it's going to be like this kind of like luxurious thing. It's usually like carrots and hummus and like some celery sticks and like a case of water. At least at the level I've been at.
Oh yeah. No, I was on tour once and I was done. I couldn't do it again. I did not like that at all.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, how do real rock stars, which I was not, how do they do this?
Yeah.
How do they exist at a level?
Yeah.
They can, it's truly unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
And I was on tour for part of the tour with a band called Fisher Spooner. Remember Fisher Spooner?
I do remember Fisher Spooner.
I was actually filming. I was their DP. I was doing a documentary about them. And that was intense just to be on the road with them. I mean, they weren't into there's no drugs, no alcohol, nothing. It was just the monotonous, like the just all those hours on the bus, you know, even longer time than we spent on the bus on our short, dumb tour, you know?
So you were on a bus for your only tour?
No. I'm saying we were driving a minivan.
You're driving a minivan, okay? And they were on a bus, okay?
The tow trailer. Yeah, they had a full size bus. And
wow.
And Casey Spooner actually stayed. I think he stayed in a hotel.
Wow. Okay.
He wasn't with us on the bus. We stayed on the bus with the rest of the band.
I was working for Alternative Press on the Warped Tour early 2000s, but I was also in a band that was playing some shows on it, and I was on a bus, and the rest of my band wasn't on a bus.
Oh my God, Jonah, that's crazy.
And you know, the way it worked back then was every night a band would barbecue for the whole tour.
Oh, wow.
And so there was like a certain band. And so there'd basically be a big barbecue, big party every night after the show ended for like the bands and the crew. And I remember, this must have been such a bummer for them. I was, you know, looking back on it, but I remember we would play, we'd load up, I would work, and then they'd be like, okay, we have to drive like 12 hours. And I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go to the barbecue and then fall asleep on this bus and wake up and just make the next show. See you tomorrow.
Yeah. That's the way it goes. But just think how jarring that is to do that all the time. I know.
It's rough. It's rough.
Wow. They must have been like, who do you think you are, an EBT? I'm just kidding.
I know. It's pulling that EBT card. Vanessa, what about you? You've done a fair bit of touring in the comedy biz. What are your eating habits like on the road?
I didn't really start. I never really toured. Well, I guess when I did comedy in Chicago, I would sometimes like understudy the touring companies, and we would drive in minivans to like different cities and stuff. I think someone was always assigned to drive. I never had to do the driving, and that would be tough sometimes. But as soon as I got on SNL, I mostly just any kind of touring I did was to do stand up at colleges, and those were pretty cushy gigs. That's where I discovered that I could make a rider and you know, put a ton of
That must be a nice feeling. I think you're the only one who's experienced touring with a rider. George, you know, somewhere Vanessa did tour, though, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this, is she did a 4 months on a cruise ship.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Which is a really interesting food scene, because it's like you're not really getting fresh stuff all the time. Have you ever been on a cruise or anything like that, or eaten on a cruise?
That's funny. Do you know the story?
I do not know the story.
I have actually not even mentioned this yet. I was about to announce it today or tomorrow. I've been asked to, you're getting the first break here.
Oh my God.
Wow.
The breaking news. I was asked to design a burger, or basically make a burger for Virgin Voyages. And starting next week, my burger is going to be on three of their cruise ships that go out of Barcelona and Miami and I think Athens.
I did a ship out of Miami once. Wow, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry. Okay. Who cares?
I was very excited. So my burger is going to be on three of these ships for 2 months as a special.
Oh my gosh. And so how did you approach
this? My face on
it.
How did you approach this burger? Like, what were your thoughts? How did you conceptualize it, I guess?
Well, so I make one burger pretty much. Okay. All the events I do it's the Oklahoma Fried Onion Burger.
Okay.
It's only five ingredients. It's beef, cheese, onions that are basically smashed and fried into the burger, salt and a bun. That's it. It's very, very simple. Nothing else on the burger at all. I made 300 last night in an event. I mean, I'm kind of wiped out. 93 degrees outside. Cooking was not easy.
Oh my gosh. You have this totally dialed in. You do it all the time.
Yeah. So I went down to Miami last week and showed the crew how to make my burger. We did a whole training session. I flew in literally just to make the burger and then leave.
Wow.
And so I'm going down. I feel like a little bit of like a, you know, burger celebrity now. They're flying me and I make the burger. 15 minutes later, we're off the ship and I'm leaving. And they're going to make the burger for 2 months on three ships. They're probably going to make like 80,000 burgers in the next 2 months. I'm going down. I'm going to be on one of the ships to give presentations on hamburger history and talk about that actual hamburger, how to make it. So it's be fun.
Wow. And last night, was the event to promote this that you made 300 of them?
No, I was just doing a pop-up. I do pop-ups. I started pop-ups before the pandemic at Smorgasburg and that sort of thing. And then, of course, they shrank during the pandemic. And I started doing a lot of them. I was actually making burgers right out of my house right here.
Wow.
In the first week of the pandemic, we were making them, do you know about this burger slide? We did this thing where I was making burgers in the backyard. You could order a burger on an app. And then, you know, I went double at 2:15, and then the window would open up at 2:15, and the burger would go sliding down an actual, like, we had a 6-foot slide that came out of my front window of my house down the street. People loved it.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. Well, how long are you going on for?
So I'm on a short cruise because I'm opening a restaurant also next month, so I decided I need to get back. There's a lot going on, I know.
I'm having anxiety thinking about the person on the cruise ship who has to make your burger for you. and being like, oh my gosh, George is going to eat this burger that he invented. Did I do it right?
So funny. I have a huge fan who makes my burger at his restaurant in Argentina. He's actually going to be on one of the ships out of Barcelona next month. And he said, I'm going to keep an eye on it for you. Don't worry, I got you.
Wow, that's great. And let me just say, as someone who worked on a cruise ship for 4 months, those passengers are going to be real happy to have you on there because the food in general is not great. So to have a George Motz original.
That's why I'm working with Virgin Voyages, because they have a great food program. I'm actually involved because of two other great chefs that got me involved. And I know they make great food and they're on the ships already. So Virgin has a different level of food going on. It's not like the
ship I worked on was not Virgin Voyages. I won't say what
it is. But I do remember that on this ship, Vanessa was, I went on it with my parents when she was working. Vanessa was like, we're getting sushi, but we have to get it tonight, because the sushi's going to sit here all week and it's fresh today, but it's only, you know, because they don't get shipments of,
Wait, Vanessa, how long were you on the ship?
4 months, but it was week-long cruises. Ooh. So we would every Sunday we'd get to get off either in Miami or
New York. We would get
brunch
sometimes.
Yeah, in New York. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Vanessa would dock on the west side, like by the West Side Highway, and she'd have like 3 or 4 hours off while they changed over the new, so we get brunch or something. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I can't even imagine. I'm only on for 4 days, and land is within sight the entire time. We're going down to Bimini, about to Bimini. That's it. So
Bimini.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's what we did. We just went to Bermuda, the cruise that you did, Jonah, the one that went out of New York.
Yeah.
You and mom and dad. Did,
apparently, getting lost in the Bermuda Triangle not as much of a thing anymore, because I kept asking people on the cruise if they were nervous about it, and they're like, no.
Yeah, you were like really into that being a thing. Sort of
just freaking everybody out on board. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, who's this guy? What's he talking about?
I was like, no one's worried about this. And there's a big thing. They're like, yeah, we do this like every week. It's not really a big deal. So the joke was on me.
Well, with that, maybe we'll take a quick commercial break while we ponder the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. And we'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Okay, and we're back. Now, George, are you ready to play a pretty fun game?
I like games.
All right.
Okay, This game that we're about to play is called Change.Dork.
Change.Dork.
Otherwise known as, let's make fun of people who don't know how to use Change.org. So in this game, we'll bring up three petitions that people have put onto Change.org that seem really important and really worthy of Change.org. And we'll talk about each one. And at the end, we'll talk about which one we would each sign if we had to sign one of the three. Okay. Jonah, do you want to read this first one?
Sure. Okay. So this is a short one. It's called Make America Bad Again, Make My Dad President. It's closed. It had five supporters. It's short. It's started by someone named Chef Nick. And it says, Make America Great Again says a famous Donald Trump quote, but why? Why should America be great? Being great is a lot of work, and I'm not willing to put that kind of effort into this country. I propose my dad become president. When people want food, he'll be like, are you going to start paying rent? And then go back to watching a Three Stooges marathon on AMC. So what do we think about this petition making this guy's dad? I did think that was kind of funny when you asked for food and your dad says, when are you going to start paying rent? What do we think about this petition? George, I know this is a bit of a tough one for you because it's not a ton of context, but what do you think?
Right. I think it's real. I think it's real. I think it's, yeah. I'm not in that position yet. I have a kid in a freshman in college, so she's not quite ready to start, you know, living off of me yet. After, you know, college, that is. She's right here right now.
Okay. At what age when she says, hey, what's for dinner tonight? Do you go, are you going to start paying rent? Something our parents, by the way, have never said to us.
That's right. That's fair.
I might actually say it before she asks the question.
Yeah.
I was at home for about a year after college.
Yeah.
And me too.
I remember thinking, I need to get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
I know.
I found my way out pretty quickly. By the time I was 22, I was on my own. And I was so happy to be on my own, living in an apartment in Manhattan. Like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing.
I was broke as hell. I think I was making $12,000 a year back then.
I remember I lived at home after I graduated college before I got my job. Not for long, maybe 3 or 4 months. But I remember I would go behind these buildings in our house and just skateboard behind these offices every day. And I remember at one point after a couple months of this, our parents being like, Jonah, are you going to like start applying for jobs? Because I was not going to be a professional skateboarder. But I was like, no, this is like my time to do. Like, I think they were getting a little concerned I was going to be there for like the next 40 years.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I created myself a Woody Allen marathon movie where I watched every Woody Allen movie in a row.
Okay.
And I decided I'm just going to, every day, and this was going to take like 40 days. I remember my dad thinking like, what's going on here? Is there a plan to work somewhere?
Yeah. But
he was never really pushy about it at all.
Yeah.
And a job just happened to come along, and I was very fortunate.
Same here. So, that's
never,
a good
never, never finished
lesson.
The marathon.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you figured it out. I think I moved to Chicago after college, but I think I lived in Cleveland just for the summer with mom and dad, and I worked... Not to brag, George, but I worked at a place called Bravo Cucina Italiana, which means Italian kitchen.
Yes.
Italian. And I was a hostess there, and I reconnected with a lot of my friends from growing up's parents when they would go eat there, and it was really fun.
I love Cleveland. I was just there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What a great town. I kind of forgot. And Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a big draw, obviously, for me.
Sure, yeah. Sure, of course.
But a friend of mine just got the number one new restaurant there, Cordelia.
Really?
Oh.
And I just am so happy. Like the food scene there, the burgers are fantastic in that town. They're a really great burger town right now. So
really? I didn't know that yet.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to ask you for the best one, but off the top of your head, is there a place to get a burger that we could... tell our Cleveland listeners to go to, including our parents?
I mean, Cordelia.
Cordelia.
They actually have a great burger on the menu. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Okay. I mean,
we'll
spectacular. So good.
Cordelia. Yeah. All right.
Great.
Amazing. All right. Vanessa, do you want to read the next petition? This one might be a little more relevant.
Hinsdale Central, serve veggie burgers in the cafeteria. And this had 214 supporters. And it says, Hinsdale Central, one of the top schools in the nation, often advocates for its students to be the catalysts of change for the better in their community. For some Hinsdale Central students, this call to make the world a better place requires them to stop eating animal products such as meat, dairy, and eggs. While not all people agree with this decision, Hinsdale Central and Quest Food Services have a duty to serve those students. And I won't read this whole thing, but this woman says, currently, veggie burgers, in quotes, a staple in the vegan and vegetarian diet, are only being sold in the food line once a week, blah, 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 blah. And then she writes at the bottom, the Daily Mail, an esteemed news source from the UK, has reported 360% increase in veganism in the past 10 years. Furthermore, the majority of these new vegans are under 18. It's time that Hinsdale Central and Quest Food Services honor the tradition of citizenship and acceptance that goes hand in hand with this Hinsdale Central name. We, the signers of this petition, ask for a vegan veggie burger to be sold every day of the week at Hinsdale Central High School.
George, what do you think?
Sorry, that was more boring than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it was long.
And I skipped a lot of it.
Yes.
I have a lot of thoughts about this one. I mean,
please.
Okay.
First of all, for starters, the idea of desiring or requesting a veggie burger is horrible because veggie burgers are, they're not... A veggie burger is, at its core essence, is obviously they're frozen. They're frozen crap. They're frozen pieces of cardboard that have the like a veggie flavor to them or some kind of ground up veggie matter, right? But the problem is that an actual veggie burger, when you after you've cooked it, resembles not a hamburger, you know, not a really good juicy burger, but the version of a burger we're all trying to avoid, which is a piece of frozen crap. So in a way, when someone says, oh, I'm eating a burger. No, what you're actually eating is the worst version of a burger. So that always makes me crazy. People want to do that. I'd rather have a big plate of steamed veggies, you know?
Yeah.
Just go there. Why would you want to have this thing that's been put together with some sort of, you know, vegetarian binders and then frozen, desiccated, and then served, probably cooked, by the way, on the same griddle as the hamburgers. You think the high school is actually going to be, you know, deciding, oh, what, we need to segregate the veggie burgers. No, they're going to put right in the same damn griddle, you know, with the beef grease.
Jonah, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, I think, I just kind of assume that, like, by 2023, every school has, like, a lot of vegetarian options, you know?
Right,
so I'm surprised that this just isn't a thing everywhere. So So I get it. But yeah, I think, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I think you should offer a lot of vegetarian things, maybe burgers, maybe other stuff. Yeah, I don't know. You're paying for school. You may as well have something you can eat. I don't know. But
yeah.
I think. But I just assume this was just a thing now because it seems so kind of ubiquitous. Vanessa, what about you?
Well, to both of your points, it's a little confusing because this person says currently, quote, veggie burgers. It's just unclear if this person is saying that they actually like the offering that they're getting once a week or if they're, I guess my take would be, I was going to agree with this person until, George, you came out so strongly against veggie burgers. And now I don't know what I think. Okay. So I do think we all agree that these students should have a solid vegetarian option.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a way to do it that's not a disgusting veggie burger, which I can imagine, you know, to your point, George, most, you know, high school cafeterias don't have, I know ours certainly did not have like a real elevated kitchen experience. That's what the cafeteria is for. And so you can just imagine veggie burgers are probably not.
Veggie burgers, there's a wide range there, but yeah, the kitchen cafeteria veggie burger probably is not.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Not the best, but
not incredible.
This is not a high-end moment they're having.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's sustenance that is similar to a burger without having meat in it.
Right.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right.
So.
Now, Jonah, do you want to read this last petition?
Getting hungry for a veggie burger now, actually. But okay, yes. This one is Bring Back Barbecue Fritos. This one has 33,000 signatures.
Wow.
Almost to 35,000. This is the kind of petition on change.org where Fritos actually starts to pay attention, I think, and this kind of stuff does get brought back. In 2018, after being in production for nearly 80 years, Frito-Lay North America decided to halt production of barbecue Fritos and replace them with a lesser honey barbecue twist and chili cheese flavors. So much for brand loyalty and another example of greedy corporate America making poor decisions while sticking it to longtime customers. Many of us have been eating these for decades. For many, they've become a family tradition and part of our nostalgia. We need your help in making our voices heard over at Frito-Lay headquarters. Let them know they made the wrong decision to discontinue this flavor. Need to bring them back to every U.S. market. Frito-Lay told me a petition to bring back Cheetos Flamin' Hot Asteroids was successful after millennials made use of social media and reached 90,000 signatures. They finally succeeded and Frito-Lay was forced to bring them back. So then there's all these steps, what you can do. Donate.
spread
the word. It says donations of $25 or more are doubled by change.org, meaning that this is advertised to twice as many people. Call Frito-Lay, here's the number. So
where's the money go? Line? What are they to make signs, picket signs? I mean,
also, does this person say where you would even I guess you can That's shocking.
Yeah, they got all the info. So, George, what do you think about barbecue Fritos? What are your thoughts?
Well, let me just tell you this much. I think those are, I didn't realize it was gone. I'm sorry. I had no idea. This is important to me because now I know they're gone. And here's the thing. In New York, we could never get barbecue flavored Fritos. Really? I had to get them over somewhere else. I'd see them on my travels somewhere. I was, oh my goodness. And I'd grab a bunch and then bring them home with me and I'd have them at home. Then they'd be gone, obviously. And I couldn't get any more unless I traveled again. I didn't know they were gone. So just by the way, they're not sold, at least they were not sold in every state out there. So they were already limited to begin with. In fact, New York was one of the places where they were not sold at all. That's kind of bizarre to me. So to me, I didn't know they were gone. I think it's sad. I think they need to come back. I'm signing that petition. I'm signing it. That's it. Done.
Well, George, I've got good news for you because I actually didn't really do a lot of research here. And at the bottom of this, it says barbecue Fritos are back.
I just was looking for that too. Yeah.
Yeah. And it said this was 3 months ago. So this is recent.
Recent.
And they said, and they think this petition was a big catalyst for that, which I'm sure it was. Wow. Vanessa, what are your thoughts on barbecue Fritos, I guess?
Like, good for this person. This is one of the only successful petitions we've ever talked about on this podcast.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
The only thing is this correct that this person said, I feel like George, you and I both kind of reacted to Jonah reading the part where they said, sadly, in 2018, after having been in production nearly 80 years, Frito-Lay North America decided to halt production of our beloved barbecue Fritos. Now, are they trying to say that
in the 1940s, people were eating barbecue Fritos?
Yeah. I don't think so.
I feel like,
I
don't think that adds to the petition. Like, you could say like these have been around for a long time, but I don't think pretending that they've been making them for like before,
like in the Model T Ford, they're popping.
Yeah.
Before Doritos. I mean, Doritos is actually one of the very first flavored chips out there in 1970, I think, was when they were invented.
Yeah.
So we're actually starting to bag them.
And if you're starting this petition saying that Fritos have been around 80 years, and then you're asking me for money, I'm going, I'm not going to give you anything. You know what I mean? Like, don't ask me for money right after that. So I think this person, you know, obviously the way that they write is exactly how Jonah writes about
corporate greed.
Yeah. But just in that part, not in that you make stuff up like the 80 years thing. But I guess I would say I would sign this petition. It doesn't seem like they need my signature, but I would sign it because, you know, it's something people clearly love. You know, they haven't loved it for 80 years, but makes sense and good for this person for starting it.
Yeah, I think it's a very professionally written petition. I do like rallying against corporate greed. The only problem that I have is this: donations of 25 more are doubled by change.org. It's like, okay, I don't know if that's true. If it is true, maybe this isn't the petition we need change.org to start doubling people's donation
amounts.
Like you're already getting a lot of attention, you're getting it, but it's like, those resources could probably go somewhere else on this site.
Well, and as George asked, where does that money go when you're just trying to bring back Fritos? Yeah. Like, there's no...
right.
Like, just
I'm not sure
what
the person plans to do. Like, is he going to hold a meeting and then...
Like, use it to spread awareness?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Also, I can only think of picket signs. All I can think about is picket signs and a bus to get to the Fritos headquarters or something.
They never explain what the money would go to. Donate as much as possible.
Never a good sign.
And the problem, too, is this: they say, call Frito-Lay to complain, press 0 to get to the operator who will record your complaint and send it to upper management. You know, these operators of Frito-Lay, I guarantee you, are not getting enough money to field all these people being like, I want, you know, it's like, okay.
Hello, I'd like you to bring back the barbecue Fritos. Thank you so much. My name's Vanessa Bayer. Please take care. Like, they're going to be like, erase.
Yeah, so it's I respect the, you know, the attention put into it, but there's some issues with it. So, all right, George, just to recap, we have Make My Dad, Make America Bad Again, Make My Dad President, Hinsdale Central, Serve Veggie Burgers in the Cafeteria, and Bring Back Barbecue Fritos. If hypothetically you had to sign one of these petitions, which one would it be?
It's, without a doubt, the Fritos, Bring Back Barbecue.
The
other two are weak. Sorry.
Yeah. Vanessa, what about you? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think I would say Fritos too, because now I feel really, you know, I don't know what to think of veggie burgers now. Now that a burger expert has told us they're garbage. Please don't apologize. I think you have a point, especially as we said, these cafeteria veggie burgers can't be that nutritionally sound or anything. So I'm going to say Fritos.
Yeah.
Jonah, what about you?
It's tough for me. It's between the veggie burgers and the Fritos. I'm a veggie burger fan. I do think they've come a long way with, you know, Impossible Burger, Beyond Burger, all these burgers. But I do think these Fritos do sound pretty good too. And yeah, they've been around, you know, 80 years. So it's a
or more, maybe.
Or more, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess if I had to sign one, I guess I'd get behind that one because it also seems like it's got, you know, a little more juice behind it. It seems like you could actually make an impact.
Success rate is higher.
Yes. But I'm not donating money. I'm not doing any form of money to this.
No.
Yeah. To this person.
Yeah, to this person. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, so we're in agreement, I think, for the most part. Pretty much.
I think so. I think so.
All right. George, you obviously have so much going on. Thank you so much for coming to the podcast. What are anything you want to promote or where can people find you? That kind of stuff.
Instagram, Moatsburger is the best way to find me. Always georgemoats.com or come find me in the restaurant. We're going to be opening the restaurant in September. That's the plan right now.
Okay.
See what happens. You know, barring any disasters or any slowdowns of production or whatever else, the plan is that we're putting the counter actually goes in about 3 weeks. Once the counter's in, the stools go in, all the grilling equipment will be in, all the griddles, everything, and it's all, we're off and running. So find me at the restaurant, Soho, where we're opening up on McDougal and Houston, the corner of McDougal
wow.
and Houston.
Oh, how my cool. Gosh. That's incredible. And
I
people.
Agree.
That's so cool. I used to live right around there. And also, people can get your book, which I saw when I was in Seattle as well, The Great American Burger Book.
Thank
Definitely
you.
Check it out. It's so incredible. It talks about burgers from all over the country and the world and, you know, the history, you know, about them and how you make them. And it's really, really incredible. And again, was being sold at a very cool store in Seattle. I'm sure it's sold at bookstores everywhere, but just want to plug that store that I can't remember the name of. So check out The Great American Burger Book and yeah, and your new restaurant. And also if you end up going on this cruise ship, when does the burger hit the cruise lines?
August 4th through the end of September. So 2 months on three yeah. different ships. So yeah.
Oh my gosh. Wow. But yeah, sitting on the ship, looking out at the sunset and the water, enjoying a burger. What could be better than that?
Awesome.
Yeah. And also just want to tell you, as someone who's worked on a cruise ship extensively, just know that if anyone really misbehaves, there is a jail on that ship.
There really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you see someone you don't like how they're acting, you know, maybe tell a crew member and maybe they'll put them in jail. I think it takes a lot to get into the jail. You really yeah. have to act Ooh. Out. But
is it like a real jail or is it like
it's like I think it's like
detention.
A little cell. It's like a little cell. And then I think when they get Ooh. To the next place where they dock, the person has to get, I don't exactly, I think it's wow. maybe case by case, but Ooh, yeah, there's a little jail in there.
Good to know, Vanessa.
I think all the ships.
Good to know,
yeah,
thank you.
I guess.
I'll behave.
Kinda, you're a burger insider, I'm a cruise jail insider. Just kidding, just a cruise insider. Okay, well, George, we've gotten a little off topic, but check out your book, check out your restaurant, check out your burger on the sea.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me, I appreciate it.
Thank you, George. If you enjoyed that, please subscribe to the podcast and keep an eye out for next week's episode of How Did We Get Weird, where we will discuss more stories from our childhood and cultural touchstones like CBGB.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.